Well, hello and welcome everybody to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you to lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in uncertain times. My name is Bridget Tyer, and today I am joined by my wonderful co-host and colleague, Irvin Nugent. Irvin, say hello to folks.
Well, hello, everyone. I hope you're doing well. We're recording this towards the end of October, and in the DC region, fall is beginning. We're making a little bit of nip in the air, and I love that. It just kind of is a sign of change, and yeah, things are going well. So, Bridget, I'm excited about this conversation because I think we're going to pick up where we left off. So why don't you show us what we're doing today?
Okay, Irvin. So today we are going to be building on a conversation that we had, I think about a year ago, episode 66, The Power of Well-Differentiated Leadership. We are going to focus today. Well, first we're going to redefine what this kind of leadership is, right? What does it look like? And why does it matter? But today we're going to explore together these three fundamental building blocks that underpin well-differentiated leadership. And then we're going to share two or three examples of everyday leaders who were able to show up like this in moments when there was stress and anxiety swirling around, but they were nevertheless able to embody this way of leading, and it made such a big difference. So looking forward to the conversation. You know, the first thing I want to ask you, Irvin, is, do you remember the first time you heard this concept, well-differentiated leadership, and like, what did you think of it?
I do, actually, because I remember when I was actually, believe it or not, it was a session that you gave. Yeah. It was to the Coaching Federation. It came up there, and it was, you just had an hour, so there wasn't a lot. You know, you can go into much details, but you mentioned, you know, but well-differentiated leader. And I remember being struck by that, thinking, well, what is that? I am curious. Does that mean that I'm a different type of leader or what? You know, and so when I decided to do resilient leadership training as a coach, that's when we dug deeply into it. But I remember the more I learned about it, I think it had two things. One was how my journey as a leader revolved around that as well. I found that I became a better leader to the extent of that I was becoming more self-differentiated. Not that I would have ever used that language.
Right.
What makes up a really good differentiated leader was what I was doing. And then the second thing is, as I've continued to coach and train leaders, of how this is such an incredibly central tenet that I think can be helpful. So I have not really given it away. So maybe we should start by saying, what is a well-differentiated leader?
Yeah, it's a great place to start. And you know, what I notice about your comments is that when we can describe something and we give it a name, it helps us to see where we're already embodying it, right? Yeah. And then it helps us to go even more in that direction. So
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so definition. I'm going to give a one sentence sort of bottom line definition, and then I'm going to elaborate a little bit on that. A well-differentiated leader is able to stand apart from the reactivity of an anxious group while still staying connected to them. Now, a little bit more specifically, what does this mean? So that, you know, rather than getting swept up, let's say, in the dysfunctional reactions that can plague anxious families or teams, like blaming and scapegoating and finger pointing, for example, they're able to stand above that dysfunction while still, you know, staying in touch and in tune with the group.
Yeah.
That is not easy. At least it isn't for me. If you were to be in the midst of one of these leaders, you would see somebody who exudes a calm, consistent, and principled leadership presence. And they're doing that despite, again, this anxiety or these series of stressors that might be swirling around them, or for that matter, you know, within them.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I know you've heard that before, but what stands out to you about that definition in this moment?
It is the balance. It is that ability to resist being involved in the turmoil and get sucked into that energy, and yet avoid as well just detaching yourself from it. That is so not easy. And it is applicable for every situation. So we can think of it in companies and as leaders and organizations, but boy, as part of teams that we are on, as part of family dynamics as well. You know, we're coming up to Thanksgiving next month, you know, and it just is. It's how do you remain connected in a positive way and not get sucked into this kind of vortex of negativity and whatever is happening. And I think that is a delicate balance, but boy, those that can do it have an amazing impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like what you're mentioning, Thanksgiving that's coming up. And so whenever our listeners happen to be tuning into this episode, whatever holidays are around the corner that involve family, boy, it's really helpful to prepare for that by thinking about how you can show up in a more differentiated way.
Yeah. So now I remember in that the past episode, we looked at characteristics, you know, what are some characteristics of well-differentiated leaders? But I think it might be interesting to kind of peel back a little bit more and kind of really get to the actual foundation itself. You know, what are some of those foundational building blocks upon which like well-differentiated leadership is set?
Yeah. And I think, you know, before I mention those, I want to say something that I think bears repeating, and that is that being a well-differentiated person or leader is a journey. It's not a destination.
Yeah.
So I hope our listeners don't think, oh, you know, if I just do these things, I'm going to forever be well-differentiated.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. We evolve over time, and our ability to be well-differentiated and to lead from that place really requires us to continually strengthen these basic capacities.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also maybe what strikes me when you say that as well is to give ourselves a little bit of a break, that some days we're going to be better at this than others, that some dynamics are a little easier than others. And I mean, I think you grow in an awareness, boy, I didn't get it right today, or I did, you know, and I think that's important too.
Oh, thank you for saying that, because isn't that just the truth, you know? And we might feel a sense of fulfillment and confidence that we navigate this anxious situation from a very well-differentiated place. And then the next time it's like, I just got completely caught up in the dysfunction. What happened?
Yeah.
All right. So what are those three basic building blocks? Well, they're easy to remember because each one starts with the word self. And that's because at the heart of being a well-differentiated leader is really about focusing on your own functioning. It's not about what other people are doing or saying or not doing or not saying. It's really about how are you showing up and what impact are you having on the relationship system?
Yeah.
So they are self-definition, self-awareness, and self-regulation. And so let me just say a little bit about those. And then I'm kind of curious, Irvin, to hear from you in a minute, like reflecting on your own leadership when you were leading that nonprofit organization, you know, which of these did you find easiest and which did you find most challenging? All right. So self-definition, right? So this is just all about defining over time who we are and what we care about and what we truly, truly value. And it's not a one-time conversation because as human beings, we grow and evolve, right? Self-definition is required at both the macro level, so big picture, like who am I? Where am I going? You know, what do I care about? But it's also required at the micro level in moments where we are being called to define what we think and where we stand on a particular decision or issue, right? So like we're in a meeting, let's say, and a debate ensues about how best to go forward and deal with something. And it gets kind of contentious. And then someone turns to us and says, well, what do you think? And can we define our thinking to that sort of anxious situation, even though we maybe sense that what we think and what we're about to say isn't going to be fully appreciated, right? So that's self-definition. And then there's self-awareness. You know, Irvin, I want to back up here for a second. I'm wondering if you've ever worked with somebody you know, as a coach, where early on they say to you, know, I think I'm pretty self-aware, right?
Yep.
And I always go, interesting that you say that, right? Which not always, but sometimes means that's really where they could use even more depth.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You shook your head right away when I asked.
Yeah. I mean, I have run into, in fact, I had a 360 debrief recently, and pre-process, you know, when I was asking, you know, kind of like, well, what do you think are some of your gifts, et cetera? One of the first thing they said, I think I'm very aware, very self-aware. And boy, were they for a rude awakening. Of this. I run into that all the time of leaders who I think tick the box because I think they have to, but in reality, that's always, I think to be able to say we've got that box ticks is a danger sign, because obviously there's always layers and layers and layers of our awareness.
Totally. I mean, for example, it includes being aware of and in touch with what is going on inside of us.
Sure.
Right? So what moods and emotions are percolating, what sensations are happening. And sometimes we're not in tune with that at all. But it also is about being in tune and in touch with like our strengths and weaknesses and how others see us and the impact that we're having on people at any moment in time, right? Do we see that? Do we notice when we say something that it doesn't land well or it lands really well, you know, for example? So a lot of layers to that, as you said. And then, of course, there's self-regulation. And that depends a lot on your self-awareness, because you can't regulate what you don't see. So can you, as a person and as a leader, again, when anxiety is high, can you manage your own energies, your own anxieties, your own nervous system, so that you're not leaking out onto others in counterproductive ways?
Yeah.
Can't you see why this is a lifelong journey and not a destination?
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. And every day is a new adventure in it.
When you think now, Irvin, back to when you were in that leadership position that you've spoken about before, like which of those do you think was your strong suit and which one did you struggle with maybe?
At the hazard of repeating what I just did before, I think my strong suit was self-awareness, because I was pretty self-aware, and I'd done before that role, I'd done a lot of work and meditation, et cetera. So I felt that sense. For me, you know, I think I wouldn't have described it that way, but now it really hits the nail on the head. It would be self-definition. And I think initially as a leader of an organization, I really struggled defining, you know, who I was and what did that mean? Mm-hmm. And I think like any new leader, you come in the role and you think, well, I want to have an impact, and I want to be responsive to people, et cetera. And it's very outward focused. And I think I hadn't really thought a lot about what the grounding and the values that I'm standing on, and what does that mean in daily reality? And I think that got me into trouble at times. I felt when decisions were tough decisions and there was a lot of emotional energy and anxiety swirling around, I kind of swirled around with it. I felt I wasn't grounded in that self-definition. And, you know, as I coach leaders as well, I can see that that's a big issue as well. I can see that that's a learning, and there's no shortcut to that. That really requires some thought, and then it requires practice in getting it wrong and then reflecting on what would have been a better approach.
Mm-hmm. I relate to that a lot, because it isn't just about defining yourself. You know, we can do that, but can you define and communicate who you are to a group of reactive folks, maybe, right? Who either intimidate you or who you just know maybe aren't going to fully embrace how you're defining yourself or your thinking. That's the part that's hard.
Absolutely. For me. I agree with you.
So, you know what, Irvin? I'm thinking maybe what would help our listeners the most is if we could share some really practical examples of this, because, you know, this sounds conceptual, right?
Yep.
And a little jargony. Let's bring it to life.
Sounds good. When you think about this and you think about a leader or a person that you've known who got the balance right or able to show up in a well-differentiated way, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, you know, there's an example that has stuck in my mind for 15 years. Mm. That's how much it really impressed me. It's an example where a colleague of mine was interviewing for a job she really, really wanted. It was VP of HR and talent development.
Mm.
And I remember her sharing with me how excited she was to interview for this. And she did a lot of work on, you know, for the interview, right? Thinking about, okay, so what are my strengths and weaknesses? And what are my values? And what do I bring to the table? Why do I want this job? And I think she went into it feeling confident. And she made it to the final round. There were lots of rounds of interviews. And I think there was only two people left. And it was a panel interview this time. I think there were like five stakeholders, you know, on the panel who were going to ask her some final questions. You know, it was going really well, she said, and she had connection, and she could tell she had connection because there was laughter in the room and lots of head nodding, and she was just feeling really good until close to the end, when one of the stakeholders, who happened to be the VP of Finance, asked her this question. He said, you know, how adept are you at dealing with numbers, and how comfortable would you say you are working with spreadsheets and interpreting financial data?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a pause in the room. First of all, I don't think she was expecting that question. And she could feel anxiety rising in her because, truth be told, that was not a strong suit of hers. But she kind of took a breath and centered herself, you know, and she said, you know what? I'm fine with spreadsheets and I've had to interpret financial data before and, you know, in previous roles. But that said, if what you're looking for in this role is someone who has really strong financial skills, then I'm not your person.
Mm.
And it became silent in the room.
Mm.
And she said, I thought, okay, I've lost the job. I had it, and then I lost it. But what she said to me is, I wanted this job, but I wasn't willing to sacrifice my authenticity to get it. I wasn't willing to pretend I was somebody that I wasn't. And I think that's why this example stands out to me.
Mm.
Well, the end of the story is this: she got the job.
Mm.
And when the person, the hiring manager, you know, told her the news, she said, oh my gosh, I'm so surprised. I totally thought I lost it when I, you know, when I said the thing that I said. And she goes, oh no, your response to that question, that's when you sealed the deal. Because what we saw in that moment was something we knew you would need in this role, which was the ability to take a stand, even an unpopular one, and speak truth to power, even at personal risk.
Yeah.
And you just displayed that. Yeah. So that's when you got the job. I've always remembered that. And I'm curious what stands out most to you when you hear me tell the story.
You know, I think it's something we can all relate to, in the sense of, we've all been through job interviews, and you go through, you know, a mindset of, you know, what are they going to ask? What's the best answer? How can I shine? You know, this, we're all told this language, you know?
Yeah.
And yet there comes a choice point. And so two things. First of all, that she had the wherewithal to pause. So very often, you know, we flow into an answer automatically. So mm-hmm. It's that she had the wherewithal to pause, that something in that question kind of ding, 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 ding. And then in that short pause, that she was able to choose authenticity, that she was able to, you know, kind of, no, this is the choice I have to make. That's a wonderful example, because that's doesn't always happen. It's so easy just to go through the motions and say what you think others need to hear, and to have that wherewithal is really beautiful.
Yeah, it really did stick with me. And it, you know, I think we can see in the example all three of those basic building blocks, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It was a great differentiating move that she made. And she might not have gotten the job, but it just turns out that she did.
Yeah. I love that.
What about you, Irvin? So, you know, what comes to mind? What's an example that has stayed with you?
Yeah. So one example comes to mind. It's actually a nonprofit leader that I was coaching a while back. They were going through a total systems software upgrade. It was a child welfare organization. So the software had not only HR functions and payroll functions, but it also had reporting functions that were needed for the grants that they had. So it was pretty This was a system that impacted every person in the organization. Mm-hmm. And it was an unmitigated disaster.
Uh-oh.
That the software, anything that could have gone wrong with this new software fix went wrong. And so needless to say, the anxiety in that organization was just through the roof because it was impacting not only the reporting, which was needed for grants, et cetera. It was also impacting people's take-home pay. It was a disaster. And I remember my coachee, she said to me, you know, she said, oh my God, she said, I've been on the phone. It's midnight calls. And she said, just there's so many side conversations. There's emails going off in panic and people demanding that it be fixed immediately and that we can't go on and people threatening to walk out. So just. I come off the call with her and I was like, oh my God.
You were sweating.
I've picked it up myself. Yeah. And I remember in one of the coaching sessions, she said, you know, well, what can I do? I remember when I was going through coach training, I remember one of the professors said, he said, you know, the greatest gift a leader can give their team is the gift of a well-regulated nervous system. And I said that to her and it really hit home. It really hit home because I think she was struggling with how to respond and not get involved in the churn that was happening. Yeah. And I remember I had a coaching session about a month after that. And I said, so how are you doing? And she said, you know, it's still a mess. But she says, here's what I do. She says, I come in and before I walk into the building, I take 5 minutes in the car. And she said, I ask myself, how do I want to show up today?
Hmm.
What's important for me to show up? And she said, when I go in, she goes, and I hear and I see the anxiety. The two things I've started to do is one is to not take it personally and to recognize that beneath this is concern and fear. And all of that is driving some of that behavior. And then the next thing is, he said, I want to listen, but I want to move us to what are some practical ways? What can we do? What's the solution? It had the end in sight. It was beautiful to see, but you know, the greatest compliment to her was actually about 4 or 5 months later, I was actually back in the organization, think that the software had sorted itself out, but I was doing a training session. And there was a little part of this session of appreciation where people were asked to kind of comment on, you know, kind of like, what do you appreciate about this person? We came to the CEO and I remember one of the persons saying, you know, the thing I appreciate you about the most, she says, I remember a few months back, we were going through this terrible, terrible situation. She says, but when you walked through the door, I felt the temperature drop.
Wow.
And I said, whoa, what a testament there. So, you know, it was a lovely example of someone who I think got self-differentiation right and was learning as she went through it. You know,
she
was a great example of someone who was in the midst of a fire and was like, how do I respond? What's the right response? And just through what was interesting about it, what I loved about it, through a number of just little practices.
Yes.
It made the difference and made her more self-aware. The management, you know, the self-management came in and then kind of like, who am I in the midst of this?
Yeah, that's what struck me too. Like just, you know, driving to her place of work and in the car saying to herself, how do I want to show up today? What a simple question.
Yeah.
But one that probably just got her on the right foot for that day and the next day and the next day, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a wonderful example of how small practices can help us in these highly anxious situations. Yeah. Awesome.
Maybe, Bridget, do you have one other example maybe of?
Yeah, I do. I was debating whether to share it or not, but I think I can share it in a bottom line kind of way because I think it's a little bit different from the other two. And so this was a person I was coaching who happened to be a principal of a private school. She was new to the school. And there was a family in particular who were very disgruntled. And they were not shy about making that known to her. And they were disgruntled with and disappointed with how she had handled a situation with their child, right? Mm. But more than that, they seemed to have a lot of complaints about generally the way she was leading the school. Mm. And my client was afraid they would leave and she wanted to keep enrollment up. And her fear was keeping her from leading from a well-differentiated place.
Yeah.
So I remember in one coaching session, we kind of took a step way back, got on the balcony, as we like to say. And I asked her to define her vision for the school and how she thought it would benefit students and really the whole community if they were able to create this vision, right? So she did that. And I could just hear the energy in her voice return because she was able to reconnect with herself and her vision. And from that, she had the confidence to have a different conversation with the family. You know, she basically just said to them, they came by and sat in her office and she said, so here's where I'm leading the school and here's why. But I understand you may not want to go there. You may not be interested in this vision, and that's okay. And then I'll understand if you choose another school that better meets your needs. And they didn't know what to say. I don't think they expected that. And what's interesting is they did end up leaving and choosing another school, which was what she feared. But you know what she said to me? She said, I didn't care at all. I knew it was the right decision for them and for us. So what I had once feared, the same result felt very different because of the way that I navigated it.
Love that. That's so awesome. Mm.
All these little things make such a big difference. And this is why I think this idea of being that well-defined, well-differentiated leader who's able to connect and able to define themselves with intimidating or anxious others serves us so, so very well, right, Irvin?
Yeah, totally, totally. I love that. And I love the fact as well is that so often something like a concept of this can seem very big. And I just love the fact that it can boil down to some practices that we're implementing that are absolutely helping us assess where we're at today, what's happening, kind of recalibrate.
Yeah. And I want to remind our listeners of something, and that is that all relationship systems, families, teams, organizations, they all crave well-differentiated leaders. Mm. Because when we're in the midst of a well-differentiated leader, we are better able to think our way through complex situations.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, don't be afraid to be the very kind of leader that your relationship system craves.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. So true. I love that.
Yeah. Well, this has been an awesome conversation, Irvin, as always. A delight to explore this really critical concept. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love for you to, subscribe, share it with others. We love the feedback that we get, and we have a passion for sharing this information. So please let us know. And if you have ideas for future topics, we're totally open to that as well.
Great.
Take care, everybody.
Okay, thanks, Bridget. Thanks, everyone.